And a very good morning to you, John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You. Tuesday morning, your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. All we need you to do is get on the telephone right now. Our number, of course, 5520888. That's 5520888. If you live south of the Tweed River, don't forget you'll need to put 07 in front of our number. And unfortunately, I can't take any questions this morning on how you can get across the border. That seems to be well and truly a closed subject, no pun intended. But commiserations and thoughts go out to all of our listeners down in northern New South Wales who are certainly doing it tough at the moment as a result of the border closure. But enough of that. We have our first caller online, as we say, a very good morning to Bill. G'day, Bill. How are you today?
Good morning, John. Yes, I'm well, thank you. I have a question that you may be able to answer. Put it like this. If I committed a crime which involved the death of a person, I could be charged as murder or suicide.
Murder or manslaughter?
Manslaughter, and if I obstructed somebody's business and they were sent bankrupt, could I be charged or sued for that offence?
Well, it depends whether it is actually an offence or not, what you've done in relation to the obstruction of the business. So it's a fairly complex area, Bill, and it's not just a case of, for example, if the council were repairing the road in front of someone's business because the road needed to be upgraded or something of that nature. The light rail, for example, might be a very good case in point where businesses up and down the coast, when the light rail went through through Southport, Surfers Paradise, etc., there were many businesses that were severely disrupted as a result of that, but there was no legal redress against the authority that was carrying out the works because the works were legally authorised.
Yes, well, then how would it read if somebody breaks the quarantine area or the lockdown area and knowingly comes into another area and spreads COVID then, like they've had there? Could they or should they or maybe charged with not only the breaking of the rules, but also spreading the germs which has caused death or the destruction of the business?
Right. Well, firstly, there are two issues you're talking about here. You're talking about a crime, or an offence where the quarantine laws are broken and there are specific penalties for that. I certainly don't think that that would prevent any business from taking action against someone who was responsible for bringing the virus, for breaking the law and bringing the virus into an area where the virus previously didn't exist. And it very well may be one of those situations where you'll see a class action arise. The big issue, of course, with this bill is whether the person that the action is being taken against has any real assets that could result in a judgment. And often that's the problem. Class actions are normally brought against government instrumentalities, banks, organisations that are very, very strong financially and therefore have the ability to pay the damages that may be awarded as a result. But in a case like this where, yes, there very well may be a civil claim against someone for knowingly spreading the COVID virus and resulting in financial loss, the difficulty will be what are you going to get as a result of the action other than a hollow judgment where the person against whom the judgment is obtained will simply declare bankruptcy and it's all over Red Rover.
Yes.
All right then.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes.
Okay, Bill, we'll have to leave it there. Unfortunately, we've got a couple more callers online. And we say a very good morning to Tom. G'day, Tom. How are you today?
Yeah, good morning. I don't know if mine's really legal, but inquiring
Tom,
about...
Tom, before we start, don't ask me an illegal question. No, how can I help, Tom?
Well, I'm worried about now we have to, from New South Wales, we have to have a jab to get into Queensland.
Mm.
How do we prove it?
Well, strangely enough, it's pretty simple because you have a vaccination a record, which is on your MyGov record, and you can actually download a MyGov app, which will show your vaccinations, and you can also download a vaccination, or it's not a vaccination passport, but it's a vaccination record, and I've actually got this on my phone. Fortunately, my wife is very clever when it comes to all this technology business. I have to confess, Tom, I'm an absolute troglodyte, but she downloaded onto my phone in my electronic wallet section on my phone my COVID, well, I suppose you'd call it a COVID passport, which has on it my confirmation that I've had both of my AstraZeneca jabs. So that's one thing. But I did hear something on the news this morning where a question like yours was actually put to one of the senior Queensland police this morning, and they said that to expedite getting the getting people through the border, they're actually looking at introducing a new form of pass, or maybe it won't be a new one, but it will have a question in it which you have to declare that you've had your first vaccination, and the pass will show, so that rather than the police having to pull up every car and checking their phone, for example, or them having a vaccination certificate. I did actually also print out my vaccination certificate as well, so I carry that in the car as well as this COVID passport. So I'm sure they're going to be able to streamline it to a certain extent. But hey, Tom, let's think on the positive side, and let's just hope and pray that that things remain under control in northern New South Wales as they appear to presently be. And come this Saturday, the New South Wales government lift the lockdown for northern New South Wales, and the border can get back to more of the normality that we were experiencing before.
Yeah, all right. Well, I'll have a look and see if I can download it.
Yes.
And as you say, keep a copy in the car.
If you just print it out, it just prints out on an A4 sheet of paper. And so I just keep it in the car because you never know where you might go and you might need to be able to show that you've been vaccinated. I'm expecting that it's going to be a requirement in the not-too-distant future before going into nursing homes. And in my work as a lawyer, frequently go to nursing homes to see clients, and of course I've got my mother in a nursing home as well. So I've got it in readiness that if that becomes a requirement, I can satisfy it.
Excellent. Thank you so much for your help.
Okay, Tom. All the very best. And the time on 4CRB, it just keeps rolling along. It's coming up to 14 minutes past nine. As we say, a very good morning to Sally. G'day, Sally. How are you today?
Thank you, John, for taking my call.
A pleasure.
I wanted to know about wills and power of attorney.
Sure.
And everything. Now, if you make a will with a firm, can you organise that firm to also do power of attorney and executor?
Yes, you can. So you certainly, it's not uncommon for people to want to appoint a lawyer as their executor or their EPOA. It commonly happens in situations where people either don't have any immediate family, or alternatively their family don't get on, and so rather than have a problem with the children communicating and having arguments about what's going to happen under the enduring power of attorney while the person's alive, and then more so under the will after the person passes away, they decide to appoint someone who's totally independent, so that those decisions can be made without fear or favour.
Oh, wonderful. Hmm. And also, when you get the death certificate, and you have to have certified copies to send to various basis.
Yes.
Where do you get those certified copies?
Well,
how do you get...
Yeah, well, you can get them certified by a Justice of the Peace. So it's not uncommon, again, for example, for us to get death certificates in estates that we're administering, and to have, if it's an estate where there's an independent executor, to have the independent executor want some certified copies. And so either myself, one of the lawyers, or one of the JPs in our office will certify copies of that power of that death certificate so that they can use it. And you can also go, of course, to a Justice of the Peace service in one of the shopping centres where they operate, take the original of the death certificate along, along with the copies that you want certified, and they would be able to do that for you as well.
Oh, wonderful. Hmm. And also, who would you recommend in the Bell Legal Group to handle this situation? Any particular person?
Well, what I suggest you do, Sally, is first make an appointment and just talk through completely your affairs so that there's a good idea of what you actually need before making any decisions about who you may or may not appoint as executor and power of attorney.
Okay, lovely.
All right, then.
Thank you very much for your help. Thank you.
Sally. All the very best. Time on 4CRB is just coming up to 18 minutes past 9. The Law and You is the program. The telephone number is 5520888. That's 5520888. 07 in front if you're down at the Tweed. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Hi everyone, Dr. Bill here. Did you know that skin cancer occurs not only in summer, but all year round? Skin cancers can occur even in areas that don't see the sun. So please be vigilant in winter and visit my clinic for a full head-to-toe skin check. Call my staff at Skin Alert Paradise Point to book your initial bulk build full skin check on 5577533. That's 5577533.
A 4CRB sponsor.
And this is the Law and You on 4CRB. Our telephone number 5520888. Our phone lines are presently free, so if you have a question or a query, you can call them right now and you'll get straight through. Don't forget, of course, we do have our email address, talkback@4crb.com. If you're not able to get to the telephone, you can email us a question, and we'll be able to provide an answer for that question next week. But in the meantime, as I say, the phone lines are completely free, so if you have a question or a query and you don't want to wait online, give us a call right now, 5520888. While we're waiting for a call to come through, and just following on from Sally's call, I was reading an article during the week about estate planning for modern families, and it certainly raised some very interesting issues which we do confront from time to time, but I've never really thought about it collectively in the terms of how this article was written. And, you know, it basically raised things like if you have family who live in different parts of the world, if you're in a blended family situation, so it's a second marriage and there are children from both marriages, if there are cultural issues, all of these are very relevant to be considered in terms of your estate planning. And the other thing, of course, that is also very relevant is if you have assets in other parts of the world. And with the increasing globalization of our world, which admittedly is presently on pause for the time being until COVID is sorted out, it's not uncommon to find that we have clients who have assets in different parts of the world. And so it's important to consider what the implications of that are going to be, the potential tax liabilities that may arise in foreign jurisdictions as a result of owning assets in those jurisdictions. So certainly a very interesting area, and one that you need to carefully consider if you're having to get your estate planning done in those circumstances. But we have another caller online. We'll say a very good morning to John. G'day, John. How are you today?
Good, thanks, John. My query is waivers of liability when you're in a club, and they, from what I can get off the Google, I suppose, Dr. Google, is that they all seem to be just one way.
Hmm.
For against you as a member, but more in the club's favour.
Yes, no, well, that's not uncommon that waivers are drawn to completely absolve a club from liability and indeed other things. But the simple reality is that if there's negligence on the part of the club, then you can't absolve yourself from liability if the circumstances of an injury are the result of gross negligence. So if you're in a situation where you're required to sign a waiver and they say, well, you know, if you don't sign the waiver, you can't come into the club or whatever, then you certainly need to consider that it does give the club certain rights, but in circumstances of gross negligence, it certainly may not be a complete absolution as far as the club is concerned.
Yeah, they do say that if you don't sign it, you can't come.
Mm.
But they
well that's a condition of entry, isn't it? So therefore, you have a choice to make. You can decide, oh well, if I have to sign this, I'm not going to be a member of that club, or I'm not going to go into that club. That's a choice that you're able to make before you actually enter.
That's fair enough. And how would you prove gross negligence? That'd be a bit hard.
Well, I mean, for example, if now let's try and think of an example. If you went into a club and there was a mezzanine balcony, internal mezzanine balcony. I'm just thinking of this because I remember this as an incident that happened overseas some years ago. It was actually a nightclub, but let's just say it was actually a registered club. And there's a mezzanine level in that club, and it's been designed to hold 20 people, but the club regularly allows 100 people on that mezzanine level. And as a result of that, the mezzanine level fails and collapses, causing serious injury to a number of people. I would say that is a case where, regardless of whether you've signed a waiver or not, you would certainly have rights against the club because they've knowingly allowed more people to be on that area than is reasonable. And they know that it's been engineered to, and yet they've just turned their back on their responsibility to the public using it. The public reasonably assume that they're able to stand out there, but the club knows or ought to know that that's certainly not possible because of the design limitations of the structure.
Okay, yeah.
All right.
That's fair enough. Righto, yeah, you've cleared a bit of the air for me.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm sorry, John. It's a very murky area. It almost begs that fundamental answer that lawyers so often give. It depends.
It depends.
It's a shocking answer. I hate it, but sadly, it's often the case. So it depends. All right then.
All right, thanks very much for that.
No
Thank
trouble.
You.
All the very best. And the time on 4CRB is just coming up to 24 minutes past 9. Don't forget, we'll have the local news at 9:30. So if you have a question or a query, again, the lines are all free, so you can get straight through 55208888. We'd love to take your call before the end of the program today. Just going back to what I was talking about earlier in relation to estate planning for modern families, and in particular this issue about wills that may cover assets in other jurisdictions. Some years ago, there was a thing introduced called the Unidroit Convention, to which many countries around the world have signed up, which can basically produce for you what we commonly call an international will. So that's a will which will be accepted in all of the countries that are signatories to the Unidroit Convention. The execution process for the will is one of the fundamental differences between a international will and a standard will is that in addition to having the two witnesses who must be present at the same time while while the testator signs, and they must also remain present while they both witness the will. There's an additional third witness required to the will, who will be a notary public. And so you've effectively got three people present while the will is signed, and if the requirements for the Unidroit Convention are followed, then that will be acceptable in all of the countries that are a signatory to the Unidroit Convention. The other thing too to consider if you do have assets in other jurisdictions in the world is whether it's advisable to have a will in the particular country where you have assets, rather than relying on your Australian will to deal with those assets, because some jurisdictions around the world have still have quite draconian laws in relation to death duties and things of that nature, which may in fact be calculated on your worldwide assets. So if your worldwide assets are brought into account under your Australian will, which is being used in that jurisdiction, you very well may find that there is a significant penalty of duty being paid, death duties being paid in that country on assets in Australia which would otherwise be completely exempt from a duty in Australia. So there are a couple of things that really are worth considering. The last thing that I wanted to talk to you about today, and it probably follows on nicely from a segment on Four Corners, I think it was the Monday before, about artificial intelligence. And they were talking specifically in relation to the advance of the use of artificial intelligence in relation to military equipment. And one of the comments they made was that the use of AI in military equipment removes the moral compass in decisions that may be made in a conflict situation. So whether an artificial intelligence robot, for example, will be able to distinguish between combatants and non-combatants in terms of firing at people and things of that nature. What I'm about to say doesn't really bear any relationship to that, but I still found it very, very interesting, and that is that in a world first, an artificial intelligence system has been recognised in Australia as the inventor of a patent for a system here in Australia. Now, this was rejected in the United Kingdom, both by the Patents Office and I believe in one of the courts over there. But in Australia, it's actually been approved, there's been a ruling in favour of the application for this AI system to be recorded as the patent inventor by the federal court. So that is all heralding a brave new world, isn't it? A little bit scary when you think that you may in fact have a artificial intelligence system that now owns a patent. Where is that going to take us into the future? But nonetheless, there you go. It's coming faster than we know. Some of us may be feeling that we're pleased that we're closer to the end of our life than the beginning with the advances of technology and everything that's going on in the world at the present time. But, well, that's a decision for each of us to make. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning for The Law on You. I'll look forward to being back with you again, of course, next Tuesday morning for another program. But as always, until then, it's goodbye and God bless.